You listen to the Jason Greger Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense, stay within your limits, go to gamesense.ab.ca.
Hello, doing pretty good. Jay, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, I'm just living the dream, buddy. Living the dream. was quite the weekend in sports, no question about it. Let's start with the Edmonton Oilers, and let's start with the Seattle game, because I thought they were actually better in Vancouver than they were in Seattle. But what stood out for you on Saturday night?
Just the malaise, the lack of you know, the perimeter play that's just been – we've been watching perimeter play since game three of the season. You know, the lack of – I mean, I don't want to say urgency because it sounds like that means they don't care and they're not trying, and that's not true. People who say those guys are out there and they don't care if they win, they're not trying. They don't have any understanding of the professional athlete. They do care. They are trying. It's just not working, man. And the Seattle game was a great example of – you know, there was 35 minutes of hockey the Oilers played, or I should say probably about almost 50 minutes of hockey the Oilers played with nothing happening, man. Like, no pucks on the inside, nobody getting hit, nobody doing anything to fire up some emotions on their team. No, you know, it just was dull and mundane and boring. You watch the game, what do you think?
Yeah, the Saturday night game, I didn't think they generated a whole bunch. And I felt like, you know, nothing would happen, and then they would just make a real five-bell mistake, and boom, it's an on-man rush. And, focus to detail wasn't there on Saturday night. And the coaching staff obviously noticed it. They switched up their top pair defense when they put Bouchard with Nurse, and they put Ekholm with Wallman. And the Ekholm-Wallman pair was even. The Nurse-Bouchard pair ended up plus one on 5-on-5 on Sunday night. So in a way, you can say that's a win in that regard. I did see, like, I saw way more promise in the Sunday loss. Like, well, A, Leon Draisaitl played his best game of the season, I thought, in Seattle. And then he was really good again in Vancouver. And Trent Frederick, Speck, we've talked about, Trent Frederick had 17 hits in the first eight games of the season. He had 12 on the weekend. He had eight hits. Like, last night was his best game. It wasn't even close. Like, he was engaged all over the ice. Not only was he physical, they won board battles. Like, how many times did they hem the other team in? Like, I thought that line did a good job of giving you momentum building shifts. So, you know, it's a low bar, but that was easily his best game. Like, it wasn't even close.
Yeah. And it's a place to start. Like, when you're Trent Frederick, your job is to do that, to recognize when your team needs, you know, you're not going to probably turn many games with huge goals. The odd time you will, but most of the time, Trent Frederick's going to get his team going by something he does physically, by having a good shift, by drilling a couple guys, by creating, you know, Putt Colson creates that turnover that Roslovic scores on, right? You know, it's just a good, hard, dogged bit of forecheck by Putt Colson. Next thing, it's in the net.
Yeah.
So yes, that the signs from Frederick were good. We got to see more than two games in a row out of this guy. But I'll tell you this: everyone else on the team's been starting awfully slow too, and he has too. So it's probably not fair to just single him out above everybody else.
Oh God, no. This is, you know, it's a big problem. There hasn't been a lot of guys that have gotten going so far this season. Now, you know, the good news for the Oilers is they're 4-4-2. You know, it's basically just average, right? But they're not out. It's not like Vegas the last few years where Vegas is a house on fire and they were 14-0-1. And, you know, you're like Edmonton at one point was 20 points back, right? Like, they're only 3 points behind Vegas right now. So that they haven't dug themselves a big hole to get out of. But you come into town tomorrow, you got the red hot Utah Mammoth, winners of seven in a row, Speck, and outscoring everybody. They're fast as lightning. Although the Oilers, I will give them credit, the Oilers are pretty fast right now. So I'll kind of be curious to see how they look against this quick Utah team tomorrow.
Well, I think it's also a bit of a, I think the Oilers could turn a little bit of a page. Like, this road trip, this last eight games, I'm going to say I've looked through their schedule, and I'm not sure that's not the hardest 10-game segment of the season in terms of traveling. And I mean, they played 7 out of 10 on the road. The one home game came in the middle of an 8-game, you know, journey that was basically like a road game. So it's almost like you had two home games out of 10. They were all over North America. So I would say to you that having made it through this, at basically a 500 points percentage, 10 points in 10 games. I think they can turn a bit of a page here. They're home for a while. I think they're home for five of the next seven. I think you can say, okay, we do see some positives from the weekend, Jay. I think you just described them better than I did. I think if you're the Oilers, you could say, okay, you know what? We see some upswing here, some uptick. Our power play's going. We got a couple guys going. We got some home games. Let's play Utah. Let's beat Utah. You get the Rangers coming in. You get Chicago coming in. I think they can turn a bit of a page. I think they've made it through a tough, tough time in the schedule, and now it's time to maybe. I'm not telling you to take your foot off the gas. I'm just saying that the schedule gets a little bit more favorable for a team now, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you just looked, you're playing every second day. You know, you're home for the first time, really, for this long of a period. And then next week, they do have two games in St. Louis and Dallas, but they only play.
Those are always tough.
Right? But, yeah. You know, and they're back-to-back, but, you know, it's two games in 6 days. So it's not like it's,
Right.
Right. You got 3 days off after that. So then
you come
get
home and you
up.
Get like, you come home and get Columbus or somebody. So I'm just saying, like, I think this team's probably sitting at home today on a day off, just taking a little breath, right? And kind of collecting itself. And that's fair. You know what? They've had a really, really tough schedule to start. They haven't been very good at all. We all agree on this. But they're right in the thick of things. You know, I haven't checked. I think, is this their most points they've had after 10 games in the last three seasons? I'm not sure it isn't.
No, well, yeah, they've improved from 5 2 years in 24, and then last year they had 9, and now they have 10.
There you go. So they went to the cup the last 2 years. So let's all take a breath here, right?
Yeah. No, it's true, but I just, you know, having a bad start doesn't mean a cup appearance again, I wouldn't think. But, like, to me, there are some things you say, okay, Connor McDavid isn't going to go goalless 5-on-5 in his next 10 games, or at least I wouldn't think he's going to. He does have to shoot the puck more, though, Spec. He's at the second lowest shots per game of his career. His rookie season is the only time he's averaged. Now, I know it's only 10 games. Season isn't over. But he's at 2.8 shots per game. The second lowest in a full season of his career is 2.92, which he did last year. So it's a little bit of a trend here that's got to – McDavid's got to be – he's got to shoot the puck more, especially Spec. He's faster than he has been in many years. He's the fastest top burst in the NHL right now, a full mile an hour faster than every player but two in Makar and Cooley. He's got 18 bursts of 22-plus miles an hour. The next closest is 10. So he's got double everybody but one guy in the NHL right now. So, you know, he's flying out there, but it's not leading to shots on goal for him specifically, or even when he's on the ice. So there isn't, that's an area of his game that he's doing a lot of the right things, but you got to shoot the puck. It's just that simple.
Yeah. And I don't know whose couch he's got to lay down on, but I've personally had the conversation with him a couple times about his philosophy on shooting pucks, and he'll say to you, and he's not lying, I need to shoot more. I want to shoot more. I think I should shoot more. Like, if he was on the phone with us right now, he'd be saying, yup, Jason, you're right. So why doesn't it happen? That's, I don't, no one has the answer to that except for Connor McDavid. Why doesn't it happen? You know, you were standing there the other day when he said to us after the scrum, he says, hey, it's my nature to be passed first. And it's hard to get my head out of that. But I think everybody around him and I think him, Connor McDavid himself realizes that there's got to be more shots. There's a lot of good looks that aren't turning into shots, and somehow he's got to flip a switch and get a little selfish here.
Oh, no, no question. No question. Right? All about it. We just had Bill Armstrong, the GM of Utah, on the show today.
Oh, yeah.
And man, their top six right now is really good. Like, this is, it's funny. It's the Utah Mammoth. And, you know, I know they're technically second year in the league and whatever. I still associate them with Arizona, even though I know they're technically two different franchises. But, you know, they never came to town being like, okay, you know, whatever. It used to be, oh, it's point night. Now it's like, we better be on our game night or we're going to get embarrassed. Like, they are rolling right now.
Well, listen, how long did Arizona build for? Like, sure, they're a new franchise, but it's the same players.
Yeah.
You know, same management, same program. Arizona's no different than Montreal or Ottawa or Detroit or Buffalo. At some point, when you build and build and build and build and build for a million years, you better get good, right? Now, you know, it's the people of Utah are the benefactors. They didn't have to go through all those terrible years when Arizona was muddling along in a rebuild and didn't have a hot clue what they were doing. You know, they've got a pretty good GM now in Billy Armstrong. They've got all those years behind them. They got a bunch of young guys that are starting to turn into players. You know, they got a goalie. This is like walking in the 2 years after the Decade of Darkness and saying, hey, that how painful could that have been? If you lived it, it was painful. So, you know what? Good for Utah, but this thing didn't happen overnight, man. They've been slugging away at this rebuild for like 7 or 8 years. I'm going to say to you, Jason, it's about time this team was any good, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, no, it's true. But like, you look at the moves, the Sergachev trade, massive, gives them a number one defenseman. Then you went out and you got J.J. Paterka, fills out another hole in your top six. And Armstrong says, yeah, I think we're maybe 60% of where we're going to be in the future. They got some young guys coming. You know, they got to kind of retool some pieces. But they're at least like, if I'm Minnesota and St. Louis, I'm concerned about Utah because that's a team that was out of the playoffs last year that's already 7 points ahead of us this year.
Yeah.
And they look good.
I don't think many of us picking us who are picking, not a lot of guys had Utah. They may be on the fringe, but when you look at the Central, you go, well, who are they going to beat? Like, they're not beating Dallas. They're not beating Winnipeg. They're not beating Colorado. So for my money, I had, you know, a handful of teams, a couple of teams shooting for fourth place in the Central, but maybe Utah's going to rewrite that theory. Hey, maybe Utah's better than we all thought they were, huh?
Yeah. Well, no. Hey, they are. They look really good, and they can really skate, man. Like, they can really move. So that's
good. I'm looking forward to the game tomorrow night.
Quickly, let's get over to the World Series spec. My goodness, Yamamoto, what a performance! And even Gosman, what was it? 17 batters, 16 in a row. Like, it was a great pitcher's duel. And then, you know, the Dodgers got the two home runs there. But I look at that Yamamoto performance, and man, he was unreal, and you just wonder if the Jays somehow could have got a run in the first inning, then maybe that would have changed things up.
Yeah, it's the clutch hit. Like, they had a couple of shots at getting some runs early, and Yamamoto pitched out of it, basically, and then found his groove. Is he not throwing two complete games here in a row?
Yes.
Yeah, he's throwing two complete games in a row. So that pitcher, you know, like, I think we've watched the Jays enough to see what they – one of the things that they've done well, like, they don't strike out. So when you don't strike out, you see a lot of pitches. That means you've got guys like Kirk that foul off a million pitches. So you foul off a million pitches. That means you get the starter up to like 70, 80, 90 pitches in like the fifth inning. So that means no matter how good the starter is, he's not going the full way. And the Jays have made a ton of hay off other teams' bullpens, right? They hang around. They get that starter tired out. He's out in the fifth. He's out in the sixth. And then they beat you up. You know, they're the comeback team of the year. Well, who do you think they're doing that against? They're doing it against everybody else's bullpen. So they couldn't get Yamamoto out of the game. They couldn't, you know, roll up his pitch totals, right? He got out of there. Good for him. He got out of the innings. He kept his pitch totals very reasonable. By the end of the night, I'm not sure he threw 100 pitches, but that's the key to this guy. You got to find a way, man. You might not beat him. Your best bet is probably going to be beat the guy that comes in after him. And the Jays never did see that guy, did they?
No. What do you make of Scherzer going tonight and Bieber tomorrow?
Well, you paid Scherzer. You know, this, I mean, I think you brought Scherzer in for this game to a large extent, and Bieber, frankly. And I know we can all think of things we don't like about Scherzer's season. The last game he pitched, he was really, really good. And I think at some point you got to just have faith in, this is our team. This is what we built. We brought in Scherzer to pitch in this game. We brought in Bieber to pitch in the next game. And we're gonna follow the plan. You can't bail on your plan all the time. And how are they going to do? I don't know. I'll tell you in about 3 hours here. But I'm not – you know what? Those guys both have huge pedigree. You're asking them to give you one big game each in a huge stage in the World Series. They've both been in that situation before to some extent. I don't mind it, man. I don't mind having those guys on the mound for me because they've been there before, and that's a big thing this time of year.
Yeah, no, that is fair. Spec, it should be fun, man. I can't wait. You can listen to it right here on Sports 1440. Have yourself a good night. We will talk with you tomorrow.
All right, thanks, Jay.